Welcome to the Autoblog Podcast. I am Dan Roth. Joined with me is Zach Bowman. What's up, Zach?
Give me some verve, Dan.
Some verve?
Autoblog Podcast.
Do you want me to start this again, or shall we just...
No, just keep going.
All right, and also, Jeffrey Ross.
Back from my return visit.
Awesome. Woo. And the Tire Rack is brought to you by... the Autoblog Podcast is brought to you by the Tire Rack, your online stop for tires, wheels, brakes, accessories, and know-how. We use Tire Rack for our long-term vehicles here at Autoblog. I've been a satisfied customer. There's a thrill to coming home to a full set of tires mounted on wheels that UPS just tossed on your porch. That's pretty awesome. You can check them out at TireRack.com. Expertly tested tires, excellent user reviews, good stuff. All right, so Zach, the biggest question is, what are you driving?
Where the hell have I been?
Well, yeah, here's that too. We'll get to that. But yeah, what have you been up to? Because people think that I like shipped you and shunk off to like Siberia.
That's like if Siberia were in warm and sunny California, that's where I've been for the majority of this month. I went, not the majority, that's probably unfair, but I was out in Monterey for the Pebble Beach festivities and the Monterey weekends, all the auctions and the historic races at Laguna Seca and Concorso d'Italiano and all the rest of that crap. I did say crap. It's a different world, man. It's just a different world. Like I know, like on some level, all car people are car people, but there's a certain level of wealth that goes on. That's just
see the Pebble Beach people strike me as like less car people and more like sailboat people, and I like car people better.
That's probably accurate. I think it's funny because there's a deviation. There's like the people who have the cars to be there at the event, and then there are the people who have the cars there because they love their cars, and they're the guys who take the cars down, like the drive down the PCH, and that's cool. And apparently there's this whole class called the preservation class where you don't restore anything on the car.
Which is awesome.
Oh, so cool. There was this guy in this this ancient Packard. Yeah, you know, he's driving this thing around, and Drew Phillips, our photographer, and I are trying to keep pace with him in a Dodge Journey, and we were just getting our teeth kicked in. I mean, this guy was just hauling the mail in this ancient Packard. It was really, really cool. A lot of cool cars, a stupid amount of money. The coolest thing is definitely the historics. If you ever do the weekend, you know, Pebble Beach and Quail and all the rest of that is a spectacle. If you get a chance to see that on someone else's dime, you should totally do it. But the historic races are really, really where it's at. This year was the featured mark of the Shelby Cobra. And, you know, you grow up and you go to car shows and you see Cobra replicas all the time, right? It's just one of those things where, I mean, you know, I grew up in the South. The Shelby Cobra is one of those cars that's, you know, it's a legend. Texas man built this car to go over and whoop Ferrari and all the rest of that. I'm not going to do that again. You never see an original one, right? So here there are 47 original ones racing on track.
Yeah, and they're like, just looking at an original one, it's got to be like a contact high.
You're walking through the paddock and like suddenly you're just overwhelmed, and suddenly you're just like, you just glaze over. You're like, there are so many here that are real. It's a trip. It really is a trip. And to hear those cars come by, like, we think of modern race cars as being loud. No. modern race cars are like vacuum cleaners by comparison, until you've been like punched in the head repeatedly by like 47 289s and 427s as they come by. You have no concept of what loud is in the race car world. So yeah, it was definitely a cool experience. Went from there to a drive that we'll have to talk about next week. Super top secret, secrety secret. Just a lot of travel. I was up in Colorado for a little bit for the Flying Miata thing, and I've been everywhere. Now I am driving a Volkswagen CC.
Ooh, pretty car. Well, it used to be prettier, but it's still pretty.
No, I still think it's a very attractive car. This car. It shocks me every time I get it. You know, because it shows up, and like I don't really know what this car is supposed to be doing. You know, like, Volkswagen has a midsize car, it's the Passat, and then they have a C-segment car, and it's the Jetta, and what the hell is the CC? What is it doing? Well, it looks great. It drives really well. It's fairly cheap. Gets tolerable fuel economy. Has possibly the worst ignition system on the planet.
There are worse.
It's the same one that Volvo uses where you get this chunky key fob and you're like, oh, keyless entry, how very nice. I'll just walk up and I'll open this door with my hand. Nope, you got to get it out and you got to push the button. So you're like, okay, well, you push the button and you open the door and you get in. And inevitably, you put the fob back in your pocket because if it has a fob like that and there's no key, surely there must be a push button start. No. Wrong, sir.
Yeah.
Wrong. You must insert this giant, like, deck of cards. But it's a chunky piece of plastic into the dash and then press it with your forefinger into the dash and hold for 2 seconds before the car starts.
Yeah, and Volvo was like maddeningly inconsistent with that. Like some of them you had to put the coin into the slot, some of them you did not. It was just like, come on.
But you know, other than that, I love the car. It will sort of pick up its skirt and hustle if you ask it to. It's got the turbo 2 liter.
You had the 2 liter.
Yeah, which is always a great engine. That engine blows my mind. It doesn't make a lot of power in terms of modern turbocharged 4-cylinder engines, but Volkswagen gets that gearing right. It's got the DSG, which is a great transmission. And if you have to have a gearbox that thinks for itself, it's as good as it gets. This car had about 8,000 miles on it. I couldn't tell if it had suffered at the hands of too many journalists and it was sort of like the shift logic had turned schizophrenic. But initial tip in pretty brutal. Like it just wanted to surge, you know, and I couldn't tell if that was just from guys just bearing the
car. Oh, it may be, yeah, where it's all like confused and
right.
It thinks
so,
that.
You know, yeah, take that with a grain of salt.
So, but did you have the 5-seater or the 4-seater? Because it's available as a 5-seater, right?
I think it only comes as a 5-seater now.
Yeah, oh. I think that's accurate. I think I just had the 5-seater, and I'm pretty
and that's,
sure.
That's what I wasn't happy with the new CC. You know, the styling, it kind of went backwards to me, but they should have left it a 4-seater, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly makes sense. I mean, it's like
if you want a 5-passenger, you go to a Passat.
Right.
You know, no, I think the people who buy this, they don't care about the rear seats.
I think the people who want to sell them do care that the people who want to buy them might want to put somebody in the middle of the back seat.
Well, the car really is like the ultimate poor man's Audi. You know, it's the most Audi feeling of the Volkswagen clan, both of in terms of styling and driving. But yeah, no, I 5 seats, 4 seats, who cares? It's still a sharp looking car. Still has some of the best seats in production right now. They're just really comfortable. They look good. It's a good car. It's solid. It's a good one.
One of the things that always amazed me about the CC, you know, Volkswagen's doing their solid thud campaign for the Passat. This thing has the pillarless windows and it still has a solid door. Like, I don't know how Volkswagen pulls it off.
Even with the window down, or does it do like an imitation of like a 77 GM Colonnade where you close the door and it goes... Thwap, 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 thwap.
No, it closes and it goes thud. Windows up or down.
It's also got that terrifying
wind noise.
Yeah, it's really well sorted. But it does that terrifying thing where like you walk up and you unlock it, and it all the windows go down like slightly so they don't catch on the windowsill.
And in
my like only owning used car self mindset, I'm looking at that and going, that's gonna fuck up in like 3 years. I'm just gonna be like ripping windowsills. Like,
well, this is, after all, this is a Volkswagen that makes everybody remember Lucas Electronics as reliable. So
and that's sort of I was having that conversation with someone else today, specifically about my wife and I's search for a new car. And they were like, oh, well, what about the Jetta TDI, the Sport Wagon, and viable option if it weren't for that just specter of reliability? And I know all you Volkswagen fanboys will come out of the woodwork and tell me how wrong I am.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong when you're considering spending your own money on a vehicle. I don't think it's too much to ask.
Yeah, the bottom line is I don't want to have to buy a new car that I then have to work on all the time. I have old cars for that, right? So.
Yes. So, Jeff, what are you driving?
I am in the Fiat 500 Abarth.
Okay, all right. It was hunk. It got better right there with the last word.
Yes. No, it's the exact one that was Jeremy just reviewed. Mm-hmm. Exact car, same white with red accents.
And
it's, I've driven it on the track before.
You don't sound thrilled.
This No. I'm just saying, I drove it on the track and it was fun. And whenever I get a car like that that's fun on the track, you like, it can't be fun or it can't be easy to drive every day. And it really didn't feel all that different to me, like from a regular 500. Like it wasn't bone jarring at all.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a good way. Like, mm-hmm. Which means that on the track, you can tear it up and then drive it home and not have to replace your kidneys.
That's good. Those are expensive kidneys.
Yes, they are. And especially on the gray market.
So how much gas did you waste just like blipping the throttle?
I'll tell you what. On Saturday, I sat out there. I had to move it because I was mowing the lawn, and I fired it up cold, and the exhaust note is the best first thing in the morning.
It's because you know you're irritating all your neighbors to the utmost degree at that point. That's why it's so delicious. That's why.
Yeah, just letting it sit there is one thing, but they're just like tapping the gas a little bit, you know,
you know,
feathering.
You know, you live in Florida. Florida, the only state that has its own category on FARC. You really... You gotta watch it, man. You don't want to do that.
You'll have some old man coming after you with his cane.
I'm telling
you. In a couple more weeks, they'll have it even better when they drop off the XKRS Jaguar.
Oh, there you go. Better be blue.
I don't know what color it is.
You know, if it's not blue, send it back. That's all I gotta say to you.
I mean, yeah. Let's see Fiat 500 at Barth. Other than your sort of very cool reception of it, and like, I like the way it sounds in the morning. Like, what's the verdict? Because I've seen one, I've heard one from a few feet away, but it hasn't arrived in my driveway to drive yet. So, I mean, what's the kind of consensus?
I think Fiats are too small. I don't like being in something that small. But as far as fun factor goes, it's up there as far as budget cars go. I would say it's more fun than an FRS, not quite as much.
Whoa,
fun.
Miata. Wow.
Okay. I can see it's different fun than an FRS.
Well, it's all wheel spin and barking noise. And angry and noise and very Italian, you know, lots of drama, no actual products. I don't mean that, Fiat. Please send me the
No, that's fine.
Okay, so Dan, I know you're not a huge fan of the Fiat. I really, really adore the Fiat 500C, which is possibly the girliest one out there.
Well, see, let's get this straight, okay? It's not that I'm not a fan. It's
just that I don't like it.
No, I do like it, actually. I find it's surprisingly comfortable. It rides really well. It's really nicely finished. Like it's a car that entertains you. You swing the door open and you go, huh, look at that. It's just like, it's just really neat. It's put together.
You just want to pinch cheeks.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, exactly. You tap it on the rear quarter. It's just, I mean,
I've probably driven four or five different Fiats, including the 500C Gucci, which that is the girliest of the Fiats. J-Lo's little handbag. But my favorite, I drove one from Dallas to Austin on whatever interstate that is.
That is a world of pain.
No, I had the convertible model. I was jamming to XM60 Outlaw Country. That was probably the most fun road trip I've had this year.
Huh.
It's not even that big of a road trip,
I found it like slightly underpowered.
How are the truck stops? Just out of curiosity? No? Nothing? Too much?
I got some waves. No. I only had to stop once.
Okay, so
that's good.
A lot of those.
Yes, I had to get out. It was for cold too time. Much in one car.
Lot lizard was waving. That's what that was.
I will say that you know, a lot of those really short wheelbase cars like the Fiat 500, Yaris, and the Versa, and all those have really, really crappy highway manners. The Fiat seems to be better than most in that aspect.
The Fiat rides like a bigger car. That's true.
It does. It really does. And I don't know, you know, whether that's just due to damping or what, but it's right. I mean, it's a car that you would really have no trouble, like Dan, or like Jeff said, hopping in and knocking out a couple hours in.
Yeah, I did that with the Fiat 500C when I had it. I had a couple of highway excursions like that, and it's fine. The thing I didn't like was it got blown around by trucks a little bit more, and it felt a little underpowered. So the Abarth probably has some sort of power that I would be looking for, but you know.
I did take it to a car show on Saturday, and it got more attention than the Veloster Turbo in Matt Gray.
Well, that's good, because I started out liking the Veloster Turbo, and I still give Hyundai, you know, credit for bringing that design out, but I just don't like the Veloster.
Really? Why not?
I don't know.
Is it because it got too mainstream, everybody started liking it?
No, it's not. Like, I drove it, and I was just like, okay, so it's an Elantra with a weird, funky kind of body. Like, I don't
see, the wheelbase
is stretched out, and it drives like an Elantra, and I don't like the Elantra in that sense. Like, the Elantra is a great value, but it drives kind of crappy.
I'm gonna have to stop listening to you, because you're sullying my idea of the Veloster in my head. I haven't driven one.
I mean, the Veloster Turbo may be a lot more entertaining than the regular Veloster, I will say that, but I don't know. It's sort of one of those cars, it's like overwrought. It's just like, oh, it's for the youth market. And you're like, what youth market? Maybe in L.A., but this is not the youth market here.
No, they're just selling the crap out of them. I'm seeing them everywhere down here.
I'm not seeing them very much at all here. So maybe it's just a New Englander thing. We don't like it. It doesn't have Subaru on it or something.
Doesn't have plaid. Not enough plaid.
Yeah. Tartan, I believe.
Tartan, there you go.
So I had a couple of things this week. I got an extra reprieve with the M6 convertible for a while. I will say, still don't like it. So it's the same as last week. The powertrain is great, but it's just like I think I called it a schooner last week, and that's definitely true. It's just like this giant barge of a car with a tiny interior, massive engine. It just was, yeah, whatever.
I respect that car, because that car stays true to the idea of like 70s personal luxury, right? Where you just had this stupidly over-the-top, powerful, inefficient car that was all style with not a whole lot of performance.
Oh, but it has added a lot of performance. Like, it is definitely like, yes, it's a sort of neo German Thunderbird, if you want.
That's there you awesome. Go. See, and I, as a previous two-door Lincoln owner, can tell you that's right up my alley. Right, yeah. Up my alley.
And it's got that just crazy engine. I love the power. BMW, nobody does powertrain like BMW. And, I mean, the engine is fantastic. 560 horsepower, fine. But the rest of the car is just like, it just always feels heavy. It doesn't feel nimble. It's just not my thing. And it's, I think part of it is just, you know, that anybody who spends the price of a, well, I'll put it in your terms, of a very nice double wide,
or two. Ha-cha-cha.
I'm sure you haven't heard that before. But really, it was like $125,000. Anybody who buys this car is not going to, they're not going to twiddle with the M drive modes and fool around with it. They're just going to drive it sedately. And it's just not my thing. I like the SL better. But they swapped that out for a Cadillac XTS.
Ooh, very nice.
Which is also occupying the same driveway as the Nissan Versa. So I will, it's not normal that I get two cars. It's just there's a couple things going on at the moment. But I will say, the Versa feels like it should say Toro on the back and be sold at Home Depot. It's just like, it is. If you are buying a $12,000 car just to get a new car, you're dumb. You can buy so much more car.
All right, hold on now.
For the same money,
you're tramping all over one of my favorite cars for sale right now.
You like the Versa that much? I like the old.
Do you have the hatch or do you have the sedan?
No, the hatch. The hatch is the old Versa, and that's the good Versa. Right.
And I'm asking which one you have.
I have the sedan, which is the new Versa, which is fantastic.
Oh. Which is fantastic.
This, okay, all right. I will tell you a little story. All right, back in the 50s, Studebaker was still around, and they made the cheapest car they could. Like, it didn't even have a sun visor, or maybe it had one. Either way, they called it the Scotsman. You can't do that now because Scottish people will get all offended because back in the day, being a Scot, you know, Scotch was sort of like a pejorative term for being really cheap. This car is like a modern day version of that Studebaker Scotsman. Not only does it look awkward like Studebakers tend to, it's just so bleedingly cheap, and it's like,
and that's okay. That's okay. It has a stupidly huge back seat. There's a ridiculous
fine.
Amount
and
of
it,
room,
and it does seat. Have a roomy trunk. Like in terms of like car things, fine.
It does it right, and it doesn't drive horribly. Like the CVT
does not drive well.
There's I didn't a say lot it worse in that sub $15,000 yes. class. Than
yeah, absolutely.
Really.
The same people who are buying the Versa, I mean, look what else they have. The Sonic, the Fit.
The Sonic, okay. Well,
I would say, all right, the Sonic drive better.
The Fit?
Oh, yeah. The Fit runs rings around the Versa.
Yeah, the Fit's a pretty solid driver, and it has a lot of space inside. But I still stand by the Versa. I think in terms of like just bare-bones, cheap transportation, if you get your child or loved one a cheap car with a warranty, you know, it's there, it does the job. It's
I won't argue with that, but if you're buying it for like the $12,000 version, like you're getting the like base version, when you start adding stuff to it, all of a sudden you creep into that sort of realm where you can get better cars.
Well, that's
the case
same
with everything
car.
Right now.
Yeah
I just like this feels like a step backwards. I really liked the original Versa.
Yeah, see, I think the new Versa actually looks like a car. The old one looks like a bad Transformer, like like Optimus Prime slow first child or something. I don't know.
I mean,
really bad.
But it's just like it's got gummy steering. It gets blown around. It's like it's all the things that
$12,000.
I understand that, but for $12,000, you can buy a lot more car, used or new. Well, maybe not new, but
new.
Yeah, I mean,
used or used, really.
then you start getting into the, you know, the possibility of being ripped off with a $950 Previa. I mean,
that's true.
When you buy used cars, you're buying someone else's headache.
I mean, it's definitely like, it's just, it's so, it reminds me of the 80s in that sense. Like just the cars, the way they were cheap cars then. And it's, I think there's a place for it. I don't disagree that they shouldn't make it. It's just, it feels really cheap and more cheap than the old Versa did. So that's sort of my, yes. I'm not saying like I'm hopping from a car that costs 10 times as much into this one and criticizing it. So,
yeah. All right.
So, but the XTS now.
Yes. Now that sweet, holy crap. Does that not have a gorgeous interior?
It does have probably the best modern GM interior I have ever seen.
God, it's just crushingly gorgeous. Like yeah. the all the materials are really nice. The leather seats are fantastic.
Great.
The lighting at night.
Oh, that's one thing that like it's just not quite bright enough when you open the door. Like the dome lighting, it's all those LEDs.
I'm talking about the accent lighting.
But the accent lighting is pretty great. I mean, and there's like, of course, before we all remember, but there was a time before we were actually born, where calling something the Cadillac of would insinuate that it was, you know,
one of the best
or among that. Whereas when somebody says like the Cadillac of, to me all I think of is a bedazzled Cavalier. It's just you know, like
bedazzled or vajazzled.
Both. Either way, like that's what I think of. And so it's taken them 10 years, but you know, they have sort of built this brand back, and it wasn't just the Cimarron. It was the Cimarron. It was the Elante. The Catera was like a really big one. And they took the damn Merlets off the crest. Come on. So that, it just bugs me. But they put a lot of effort into the Cadillac revival, and it's taken a decade, and it's great that they finally have something that can sort of jack up Cadillac along with the CTS, because right now the CTS is sort of carrying all the water. The ATS, it's got a lot of potential, but I just don't think it's going to get those buyers who want the traditional Cadillac.
I think in terms of sales, the SRX is what's helping to carry the brand. I mean, they sell a lot of SRXs.
Standing by what I said last week about me not really liking the XTS. Although I have to be honest, I've never driven one. Who do you see buying this thing?
Well, I think that the people who bought the DTS would buy this.
And people who no longer have a town car to run to.
And the people who bought the STS would buy this, because you can get it.
Yeah, but now you have the new MKZ, which is going to be one of the best looking cars ever built, I think.
That is sarcasm.
That is erroneous, sir.
And also the MKZ is smaller. If you want to talk apples to apples, this competes with the MKS, which is also a very nice car, but this car has more efficiency, better visibility. I believe it's roomier. So right there, you know, the MKS will whip its ass if you get the turbo engine. But other than that, I think the Cadillac feels more nicely put together. It's more
it's got the Q system, which is awesome.
The Q system is not progress. Not progress. I will
not
say
progress. What does that mean? What does that mean? Not progress.
How many steps do you want to take just to change the damn radio and then flip back and change the fan speed and the temperature? Like,
you know how you do it? Do you want to know how you do it?
Punch it.
Do you want to know how you do it, Dan? Crotchety old man, you want to know how you do it?
How do you do it?
You push the voice button and you say,
I am not Michael Friggin Knight. I don't want to talk to my car.
Okay, so then in that regard,
which you were, let's put it that way.
Are the people who bought the DTS really going to go through all that headache of learning a new system?
Well, I think as we talked about last week, you know, the people, like, they're confused by the tech, but they also want it. Like, there's that sort of, yeah, I think they will, because they'll be like, oh, I had to get the system. And it is slick. I think part of my biggest annoyance with Q is how unresponsive all of the touch buttons are on the center console. And it's supposedly better than resistive touch buttons because they're capacitive. Great. They're still not workative. They just, like, you got to stab the dash with your pointer like a zillion times to get
still,
like
still not better than a button.
No better than a button and a knob.
Dial.
Why is there not a knob? A knob for radio volume. No, we got this slider thing, so I either go too far or not enough. And I'm getting worked up about it, but there's too many sort of steps. Like, the radio is on a separate page from the HVAC, so like, you got to flip back and forth and then nav, and you can't switch radios. You can't seek unless you have the radio screen up. So, and it's too damn bright at night. There's no way to dim it far enough unless you just shut it off. And that sort of obviates the point of having a screen. So yeah, it's better, but it's not as good as the time honored tradition of knobs.
Preach it, preacher man.
Also, the trunk is kind of tight for a car this big. The interior is pretty roomy, but the trunk is kind of tight. And it needs a V8. Everything Cadillac makes should have a V8. They figured out how to put the LS into a front-wheel drive car with that Impala SS business, so they should be able to put it in an Epsilon. It'll
the
fit.
Worst idea you have ever had.
No. No, because I mean, Cadillac needs something.
And that's saying something.
This is a LaCrosse, and it sounds like a LaCrosse, and it drives like a LaCrosse, and there's no friggin' torque. Cadillac should have torque. I should not have to wind the piss out of this thing to get it to just accelerate on the highway. It's
better watch that language, man. If I can't use that language, you can't.
Oh, yeah, you dropped an F-bomb earlier. You just forgot about it.
I did not today.
You did.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did, Zach.
Try me.
I will say, though, I mean, this Cadillacs at one point, they felt special. And this car feels special. It's just, overall, it's so nicely done. My gripes about the engine aside, I mean, I do feel like it would be better with something that was more torquey off the line. I don't think I like the GM V6's power delivery in anything I've tried it in, so that's not me. But it's just, you know, it's a really, really well done big caddy, and for that, I think they should sell a bunch of them. So,
all right,
that's that. I'm still not buying Q. Damn it!
Right. I think it's a step up. I'm just saying it works.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, compared to the DTS, which I also liked. Apparently, I was the only one in the world. who actually was fond of that vehicle. This is
a great rental car.
All right, I'll give it that. But we should move on and talk about other vehicles we can get all worked up about, like the 7th generation Volkswagen Golf. Who wants to go? Who wants it?
Phew. I'm not going to say this is a step up in terms of styling. I mean, it's
certainly evolutionary. We're just starting to get this sort of like...
Evolutionary. That is, meet the new Golf, same as the old Golf.
Same as the old Golf, with a slightly swoopier front end. Apparently it's based on an all-new architecture.
Well, it's bigger. It does the longer, lower, wider thing.
And it's lighter by 220 pounds, which helps. Apparently they were able to squeeze pounds out of nearly everything. The HVAC system, the wiring components, there's more high-strength steel, all the rest of that garbage.
So they took wiring out of this car?
Yeah. Well, they probably did.
It's all wireless now.
With modern serial communication, you can do that. You can take wires out.
Sure.
Sorry, not to be the voice of reality and rain in the parade.
I was just joking, saying that, going back earlier when we were making fun of Volkswagens for their electrical problems, fewer wires usually means more problems, but I was joking.
Yeah, because why would you want, why would you want a computer network in place of actual wires? Like, either way, this is going to be unreliable.
It's not funny if you have to explain it, then.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. But what I'm looking forward to is the engines, especially the TDI.
Well, that's always a win.
So I'm looking forward to what they can do to it in the U.S. version.
What are they getting out of it in the EU?
I think it said 49, and then there was another one that got 62.
Well, be very careful, though, because that's the EU sort of cycle. Yeah. It's not quite the same. The TDI always gets pretty...
But it's got cylinder deactivation
on a four-cylinder. On the TDI?
Yeah.
Wow. Spiffy. Right. That ought to work most of the time.
Do we know if they're bringing the 1.4 gasoline to 1.4 turbo here or not? Has anybody heard anything about that?
That's what it's launching with in Europe, obviously. My guess is that it's only 140 horsepower, although it's probably a lot torqueier than that.
Man, there was a day when 140 horsepower was a crap. I would have knifed a man in front of his own mother for 140 horsepower in my Civic. Twice I would have done it just for the 140 horsepower.
I read an old article today from Car and Driver from 1994 where they tested a bunch of stuff. They tested the Prelude, the Celica, and the Diamond Star cars and stuff. The most powerful ones were the Diamond Star cars. They had 210 horsepower. The least powerful one was the Celica that had 135.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, look at just, 15 years ago, the Mustang GT had 200 or something like that.
225 with the roller cam high output 302.
I
was just looking at it. The TDI does not have cylinder deactivation. It's the 1.4.
Ah, you lied.
I lied.
Wait. Web of lies.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
But
still, cylinder deactivation in a four-cylinder? Is that really necessary?
Yes. You've seen that they passed that fuel economy legislation, right? I believe that would mean it's necessary.
Requisite, sadly.
We're going to get a 2-liter, I think.
It's going to be the exact same 2-liter as we got before.
The 2-liter that we've had since... I think it came off the Ark. It's just like...
It powered the Ark, actually. Yeah. just pulled it right out of there.
But there were two of them.
Yes. Well, there was a turbo and a non-turbo.
Well, boats were lighter back then. There were
They didn't have any crash protection.
No crash protection on the Ark.
Yeah. I mean, it looks an awful lot like the Golf. And the last time a vehicle, like the current Golf, and I think the last time a vehicle got totally redone and stayed so recognizable, it was the Camry, and the world cried boo-hoo. So naturally, I expect everyone to heap just nothing but praise on Volkswagen for staying so true to what has made the Golf an iconic vehicle or some crap like that, because that's just what's going to happen.
They could have least release like the 3-door for the press shots instead of the 5-door. The 5-door is not helping. I mean,
it's a good looking car. Don't get me wrong. It's a Golf. What do you want?
The words of Prince. This bores me. I'm just saying.
I mean, I think it's going to do well. I can't see where they've taken the money out, because they've got more ultra high strength steel and more high strength steel in it. So that means that it's more expensive to build in some way, unless they trimmed some other stuff. Taking the wiring out is probably good, because that's expensive. but something else has to give when you add more expensive materials to a car. And so my thought is, like, does it have the Jetta interior? Looking at the pictures, I can't tell. It looks great in pictures, but I mean,
also, so does the Jetta.
Exactly, so does the Jetta interior.
It clearly doesn't matter, because they're, again, minting money with the Jetta at this point. So buyers apparently don't care.
Yes, you know,
the people who actually buy cars don't seem to give a rat's tail in that the interiors for crap.
I think so. Because it's people don't. They don't place the same importance on it, I think, because we spend a lot of time in cars, and so we get annoyed by...
We know how much better it can be.
Yeah,
exactly. Open your eyes, people!
Exactly, but I mean, I think people will get fixated, like, they want the Jetta, and they would like the way it looks, and they, you know, there's a lot going for that car, and I think there's a lot going for the Golf, even if it has the cheap interior. It certainly, it has that Volkswagen-y look, and it's going to be utilitarian, it's going to be roomy and efficient, so, you know... I'm impressed they've managed to take 220 pounds out of it.
A lot. That is a sizable chunk.
I'm sure that the press car is going to be the inline five. But I'm just going to be unhappy driving that. The 2 liter I get, I don't understand the five. That engine is just so lame.
Sad. Sad face is what that engine is.
Yes, it makes me make a sad face.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a Golf, so they'll probably sell a bunch of them, and, you know, they'll prove us all wrong.
Well, and I'm sure it'll still be a good driving car. I mean, that's one thing the Golf certainly has going for it. It's a fun car to fling around. So
you should wait with any of your Bowman family purchases and get yourself a Golf.
Not gonna happen. .com. Check it out. It's a new site. Sweet.
Speaking of stuff that's not going to happen, the next generation of GM hybrid pickup trucks have been canceled. Now, I forgot. Well, I didn't forget, but I didn't even think that they were still even building the original generation of GM hybrid pickup trucks because, well, an F-150, just the regular one, gets better fuel economy than the very expensive GM two-mode hybrid pickup truck. So
I can't tell you how loudly I cheered when I read this post. I mean, serious, from-the-heart cheering, because there are few vehicles that I despise more than those stupid hybrid trucks and SUVs. Drive me up the friggin' wall. I will say, in their defense, the F-250 gets better highway fuel economy, does not get better city fuel economy, and that's where the trucks make it up. 20 mph city is pretty average for these trucks.
Now, did you ever drive one? Did you get one as a fleet vehicle?
Did I ever drive one? I had one for my honeymoon,
actually. With the giant, like, all the big letters down
hybrid
there?
Yes. Boldly announced. Actually, the one that I had for my honeymoon did not, but my very first press car was an Escalade Platinum Hybrid with the giant,
wow. I drove, like, one of those in the winter,
17 inch tall hybrid decals.
Yeah,
very pretentious everywhere of you.
No, I drove one of those in the winter, and it did not get anywhere near the advertised fuel economy.
Really?
Yeah, because it was cold.
Is it because you were doing burnouts?
No, it was just
torque on demand, man. Just asking.
I was not impressed with that. I mean, the hybrid system is just fine, and the fact that the GM built a scalable hybrid system that works in pickup trucks versus the Toyota system that doesn't, it doesn't scale up like that. That's cool, but it made for a very expensive truck that just
did not deliver.
Yeah, I was gonna say it just didn't deliver.
It was a truck that was no longer a truck. It greatly reduced your towing capacity. Yeah, those stupid. And, you know, my issue with this is, okay, this is a hybrid. Your ultimate goal is to save fuel economy, and we're rolling around on 22-inch chrome wheels that probably weigh more than my house, right? You look at this truck, and you're like, okay, where are the simple places that you could have picked up fuel economy, and you didn't do it? You're just like, well, throw the hybrid in there. We're good to go.
If somebody's buying an Escalade hybrid. Now, the Escalade is
$101,000. Right. You bought a $101,000 Tahoe. I hope you choke to death. That's all I have to say for you.
Once you open the door, you realize, the only thing different in the Escalade is the seats. like compared to the Tahoe. Like it's all Tahoe everywhere. Otherwise, I'm sure there's some differences, but I was hard pressed to find them. But I mean, they're expensive trucks to begin with. So if somebody's going to spend that money, they're not going to want steel wheels, you know, even 17-inch steel wheels with very nice hubcaps, which happen to be significantly lighter than the giant, gaudy chrome things. The type of buyer and their expectations are that they want the giant, gaudy chrome things. So I don't know. I honestly think that there may still be an Escalade hybrid because it makes sense in that end of the market more than it does in like the pickup market. You know,
I still don't understand the point of it. I mean, if the Ram is getting 25 miles per gallon now at a fraction of the price, and now Ram can put that money that customers are saving into making a better interior.
Right.
So you could get, I mean, they make Rams that are, I would say, arguably better than Escalades.
No, interior wise, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, these are the oldest trucks on the market, and they're still like they're not bad in that sense. Oh. I just think that the hybrid just it didn't connect the way maybe General Motors thought it would. And so they have a very expensive system that if they had taken off and sold really well, do you think that the prices would have come down on them? I think they would have. I guarantee you the cost for this development has not been amortized.
That's a chicken and the egg sort of thing. Buyers aren't going to buy them when they see no real benefit. I mean, what was the price differential on these? Does anybody know? This is when we need our intern.
I believe it was a metric a lot.
Okay, a metric a lot, basically. It would take you X number of years to make that up, as opposed to just buying the freaking gasoline version or stepping up to the 2500 diesel, right?
Yeah, I mean, the cost savings just do not work out. But they don't even work out on the diesel. You don't save the cost of the powertrain.
Is with the diesel is I can tow this planet.
Yes, right? I understand. But
that's the difference.
I'm saying that's sort of a specious argument is buying a hybrid to make up the purchase price in fuel economy savings. I mean, that doesn't even work in like the Prius C. It just doesn't. The math doesn't work. But you know, a hybrid pickup.
Prius C? Really? You don't think that works out? I bet you it works out in the Prius C. I bet you it takes you no time to work that out. Like, as opposed to another crappy Versa, for example. Versa versus Prius C. I guarantee you it'd be no time before you make that up.
I'll have to crunch some numbers offline and see. And I also suck at math. So
it's too much math.
Yeah.
As the English major says, yeah, go do that math. Get back to me on that. I'll totally believe whatever you tell me. Numbers.
I'll call my engineer brother. Here, answer me a question. Riddle me this. You know, but also it's like it's a work truck. So what happens when your hybrid pickup breaks? All of a sudden you're spending lots of money.
You're not using your hybrid pickup truck as a work truck. You may be using it as like a mobile command center for your contracting or architecture job. But the reality is anybody who's buying a truck to work looks at the towing figure, looks at the load capacity figure, and when they see that it's greatly inhibited by that hybrid system, they just go elsewhere. They're like, oh, nope, screw that. It doesn't work.
Also, the battery tech was supposed to be updated. Like they're pretty far down the road with this, which is why I think it'll eventually show up somewhere, just not in the pickups and probably not in the Suburban or Tahoe or whatever. My bet would be that it'll wind up in some flavor of Escalade possibly at some point if it ever sees the light of day, because they did a lot of engineering on it. They changed up the batteries from, I believe it had nickel metal hydride to now lithium ion. You know, the motors have been tweaked and stuff. So, like, they had people working on this up until they decided, you know what, the truck's coming out as a 2014. It's really late in the game, so let's just smother that part of it with the pillow.
Well, if anybody has proven that they have the capacity to blow lots of money on research and development and then just do nothing with it, it's General Motors.
They are not immune. I'm glad that they decided to actually pull the plug at this point rather than put them out on the market and watch them just spectacularly fail. Because that's what they did last time.
And make me angry.
Yeah. Everything makes you angry. You're like an honorary me.
Ugh, God, is that what I've become?
Yeah.
Is
that what I've
become? Old man Bowman.
Mm. Old man Bowman.
Get off my lawn with your hybrid.
I just don't like stupid. This is what I'm saying.
This is... Yes. Nobody believes me. Perhaps it's my approach. So, you know, speaking of other new vehicles that are all about fuel economy, 2013 Sentra has a better CVT, which apparently has a subplanetary gear, which, I don't know, must... It's subplanetary, so it's got a moon.
That's no moon.
Hey, don't talk about my asteroid that way.
Oh, man.
It gets 40 miles per gallon, and it's a Sentra. And I see, here's the thing now. I get the Sentra now, the new Sentra, where I didn't get the old one because they had the old Versa, which was, you know, mostly as good as the old Sentra. And now they've put a bit of distance between them, where the Versa is... not as nice as the old one was, and the new Sentra is better than the old one was. So, you know, Jeff, what do you have? You looked at this? Did you manage to root around in the press release and get all excited?
I have driven the with the Altima with this new transmission, and I do like that setup. The new transmission, I don't know what it is.
It's the Xtronic CVT with subplanetary.
But they say you can't feel it, and you really can't tell what's going on, but you can tell it's different. Like, Nissan CVTs are already better than anything else, but this one is just a little bit better than the old CVTs.
So explain how, though. Like, how does it feel better? Like, is it like not mushy or what?
There was something when you accelerated. It just...
Is it like less rubber bandy? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, it just... It's very solid.
Yeah, and I
like,
think
I don't remember. It's been a few months since I drove the Altima, but it was just something about it when I was on the program, and I rarely ever like jump at the we added this new feature and now it's the next best thing. But Nissan is they did it well with the new CVT, and especially in a car this cheap, I can see how they got 40 miles per gallon out of it. Yeah,
but see, here's the thing, though. The Sentra is at 40. The Altima is what, 38?
38.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
Well, it's a difference in price. I mean, that's what that is. I mean, it's people... And I would encourage you to look at combined. What does this get in terms of city fuel economy? I would imagine it's better than what the... let's see, 39. So 34 combined. I think the Altima is 31. Is that correct? 32, somewhere around there. So yeah,
it's. I mean, neither of them suck. I think the problem with sort of getting that. Well, you're at that sort of. You've exhausted all the easy returns, in terms of fuel economy gains. So, you know, what does it cost? What does it weigh? At that point, too, you know, my bet is that.
No, they've cut some weight out of the Sentra, 150 pounds. That's a lot.
Yeah, and the Altima gets 27 in the city. So. You know, this is above it in the city, but my biggest complaint with the old Sentra was just sort of it felt like a nowhere car in the sense that, like, it didn't really feel like it fit in the lineup. It felt like a half-hearted effort. It sort of languished. They came out with the SER, but it wasn't really an SER, so they sullied that name. Hopefully, they can do better if they come out with an SCR on this one.
They have the freaking turbo in the Juke, for the love of Christ.
Oh, that would be
great. Or put that engine in a Sentra, please.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the SR trim level, but...
Ugh, wonk.
It's just a trim level.
Yeah, it's like stuff.
I mean, I grew up when the SER was like the freaking car. You know, the little boxy Sentras.
The B13, right?
Yes,
Yeah. I mean, that... You can't find one of those. It's not either rusty, crashed, or molested. That's the mark of a good car.
True, ones that have been thoroughly enjoyed to the point of destruction.
You know, I mean, and the SR looks good. We've seen pictures of it. It's got the alloys and all the little body frippery and stuff. So, but again, though, sort of in this arena, like these cars, it's going to play against the Focus, the Cruze, other stuff like the Elantra. Like, do you see this as being successful, or is it just sort of like, oh yeah, Nissan has one too?
No, I mean, it's just from the outside, it looks a lot better than, I mean, it looks kind of focusy, especially in the back.
But it looks a little more grown up, I think, than a lot of the options out there.
This class, it's no longer a cheap class of car. I mean, it's affordable, but you're not having to say, okay, I can only afford $18,000. What do I have to limit myself to? But You know, the interior looks pretty good too in this, and Nissan's interiors have gotten a lot better over the years.
Yeah, it's climbing the ladder to competitiveness, but everybody else has either been there or they're upping the game too. I mean, you know, the Focus is right there in terms of fuel economy too. It's a 2738, and you know, Nissan's rolling out their Nissan Connect thing, so that'll be another dashboard I want to punch. you know, it's got like integrated nav and
again, 2738 isn't comparable, and it's still significantly less in terms of combined fuel economy. I mean, don't get caught up on the highway 3839. That's an easy comparison to make. But 2730, that's a larger gap, especially when you're probably going to be spending more of your time bombing around town in this car than you are on the highway.
That's true. That's true.
I'm just saying. That's a sizable gap. That's something people should be aware of.
You know, I definitely, you know, one of the things that makes me mourn a little bit is that the power is back down, but that's just because I like power. I don't know that it's going to feel underpowered because of what the CVT does and also what most people expect. But, you know, I mean, we've seen that with the Impreza as well. They yanked a bunch of power out of that car, and it suffered for it.
Sucks.
I mean, look, if the weight really is down that much, Mazda's gotten good at lowering their curb weights and engine power, but still making the car fun to drive.
Yeah, well, I think it's probably a wash. You pull out, you know, 10 horsepower, almost 20 pound-feet of torque, and you reduce it by 150 pounds, you're back at the same performance you had with the extra power. So I don't know that it's going to feel, like, appreciably worse than the old Sentra, which didn't feel terribly great. You know, my real desire here is that they build a freaking SER, because I like that car, and I realize it's going to sell like three of them, but
let's see. That this exterior styling doesn't seem to lend itself to a performance model, you know, it's kind of stodgy.
Well, we'll see what they come up with. It looks like an Altima to me, so
looks like the Altima looks like a Maxima to me.
Gosh, they went all familial on us. It's got the Murano's nose, though. Terrible joke. So I'll move on from cracking terrible jokes to a subject. I know, Zach, you feel strongly about this. I don't know, Jeff, how much wrench turning of your own you do, but apparently we are coming up on a mechanic shortage because there's not a ton of sort of incentive to go into the trade from school systems that have closed down their shop classes and stuff like that, where they say it's too expensive, but we can put lots of money into sports and whatnot. Football, woohoo. You know, instead of teaching kids a marketable skill, I think that sort of there's connotations that come along with sort of being in the shop class and being a mechanic. But who's going to fix these really high tech cars that are going to break?
That's great intro. all right, so coming up in high school and college, all I wanted to do was work on cars and be left alone. Possible if you also wanted to get an education. So in high school, if you wanted to take a Votech, Votech class to sort of learn auto body or learn auto mechanics, you had to set aside four of your seven periods of the day to do that. Well, you couldn't do that and come out with a college prep degree at the same time. It just wouldn't be possible. It seems like high schools and our entire educational system is geared toward funneling everybody into college. Everybody go to college. You get to college and it's get this degree. And it's not, there's zero focus on what you're going to do with that degree when you get out. I know what marketable skill, like you said, what marketable skills you are going to have. And as cars become more complex, you know, there has to be someone to work on these cars. There has to be someone willing to work on these cars. And a lot of these guys who are willing to do it are getting funneled straight into college.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's...
Straight into...
Here's the thing, too, though. Like, I almost went to Vermont Technical College to learn how to be a tech. And I didn't. I went to a liberal arts school, but all of this... And I work in a technical field. I work in a trade. All of the stuff that I learned about how to troubleshoot, how systems work together, all of that stuff comes from working on cars and just being methodical. And I don't know that that's what they're teaching at, you know, tech school. Do they? I don't know that they teach sort of component level diagnosis and repair. I think it's more like plug it into the computer, see what the computer tells you is wrong, replace entire expensive subassembly because you're on a flat rate and you want to turn this thing around because the shop needs to be efficient. And, you know, I may be talking sort of out of my
backside. No, you're not. I used to be a mechanic, and that's why I got out of the industry. It was getting so, you know, plug and replace type deal. There was no more diagnosis. I mean, that's what I always wanted to do. I didn't go to college out of high school because I started working at a shop right out of high school and I loved it. But when, you know, the industry started changing and was taking money out of my pocket because...
Explain taking money out of your pocket.
Well, if someone comes in and their power window's not working, and there's a set diagnosis that they want me to take, and the answer is replacing the motor. The motor pays half hour, and then, you know, it doesn't work. So then you have to go back and do something else. All those little components don't pay as much.
Yeah, but wouldn't you check the switch, which always fails in power window systems, or the relay, which also often fails? Because the motors never die.
But these,
unless you have an F-250, people. Just saying. I was an F-250 every time.
My example is I was at a Dodge dealership, and I worked on the biggest thing I worked on was LH Chryslers.
Transmission.
Yeah, transmissions, power windows, and air conditioning. Those things made me a lot of money.
But well, then yeah, they got to the honestly, point. Honestly, if you can, I'll just take a complete side tangent here for a second. If you learn AC, you can make boatloads of money because people see it as black art and it's just refrigeration. There is some skill involved. You need to know what you're doing, but it's the thermodynamic cycle, kids. It's not terribly difficult, and it can be so lucrative because dealerships don't want to touch it either, and they'll farm it out to you. So anyway, carry on.
But it just got to the point where they didn't want you to spend the time diagnosing it. But at the same time, if you didn't do the right job, then they would flag you, like they would back flag you for it. So it just started getting a little too, not political, but
it was trying controlled.
It was very controlled, and there was no way to, you know, do it right anymore. And this is, you know, it might have been just the one dealership I worked at, but I've heard a lot of instances about it since.
No, I think it's most dealerships, you know, and part of it is that there's not a ton of schools anymore to teach this sort of, and you know, when you're teaching people and you're trying to fast track them into a job, you're going to teach them the modern stuff, and the modern approach is different than sort of an older approach, which teaches you sort of the fundamentals and you learn how everything functions together. But that, like, all the new stuff builds upon the old stuff, and you have to understand what's going on with these machines, I feel. And so there's a big gap, I think, between A, people who are going into the field. So if you think you want to work on cars, I would say go for it and get yourself into some kind of good training program. But there's also, I think the flat rate shop thing has done a lot of damage to real true craft in that sense, and just real maintenance. Because like, I put a snow brush through one of the sunroof panels on my car. It was amusing. It was not amusing in the winter.
I would have paid to have seen that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But what, you know, what happens was, like, I take it to the dealer and they replace the panel. Okay, fine. And then they come to me and they're like, well, so it wasn't working before. I was like, yeah, it was working fine. It's not working now. It must be the cables. And they wanted to sell me like new control cables. Like, no, just put the panel. Can you close the hole and I'll deal with it in the spring? So a year and a half later, I take the whole thing apart. And that means I take the front seats out because I have to take the headliner out because I have to drop the entire pan that holds the sunroof in and take it out of the car. And that's where I find all the glass that they didn't clean out. And they should have known that if I put my snow brush through the tempered safety glass, it's going to put shards all the way into the back of the tracks. And you know, that's the thing. Instead of saying, hey, we diagnosed this, It's just, well, no, you need all that new stuff. I'm like, no. And so I get that sort of wariness of shops, and it's, you know, that's why, well, I mean, it's why you are buying a Miata from an independent dealer with a good reputation.
Yeah, that's the notion. We'll see if it bites me in the tail. I will say anybody who's even remotely interested in getting into working on stuff, either professionally or for yourself, the book Shop Class is Soulcraft, it's by Matthew Crawford. It's an excellent read. It's a good critique on sort of our educational system and our, I guess, societal perceptions of what is a good job. It's funny because we all spend all this time questing for a fulfilling job, and at the same time we're all told to get the same type of job.
Oh, it's so fulfilling to fix a car. It really is.
It really is. You know, you feel like you've figured something out. It's a puzzle. You've done something with your hands, and here's this giant machine that comes back to life by your own doing. It's really a lot of fun.
I want to know what Jeff's greatest conquest was in the shop, and I don't mean like an actual conquest because you worked in a Chrysler dealer.
I don't need to hear about that.
Oh, the most satisfaction I ever got, it was a early Dodge Intrepid, so pre-96. It came in, I think the radio wasn't working, and I pulled the radio out, melt. I mean, it just, all the wires were melted together, and I was like, oh, what happened here? So I traced the wires back. This goes to show you that Chrysler wiring isn't any better than Lucas wiring, apparently. The problem was, there was a shorted out rear defroster wire that shorted out a fuse up front, a fusible link. But the person had not known it was a fusible link, so they replaced it with a solid wire, and then that just caused haywire on every component in the car. But the radio is the only thing they were worried about. So I traced.
They made every other wire a fuse.
Yeah, exactly. But I was able to trace it from the radio to the back of the car to the front of the car, and the reason I remember that car so well is because I was an expert witness in court. Because the woman was suing her insurance company, who refused to pay because she bypassed the fuse. So
to be fair, fusible links are the devil. They really are. They're one of the worst inventions man has ever come up with.
I would say fusible links and Scotch locks.
Yeah.
Oh, Scotch locks.
Which I don't know if there's that much of a difference, because the Scotch lock, you know, you get like two strands and you start to run some current off one of those and they heat up. It's just a bad, bad idea.
But the other, another great story, it was a Jeep Grand Cherokee I was lifting up on the lift. And those things, you could, if you do enough of them, you could just kick the lift and you didn't have to crawl underneath it. Well, this one bright car owner had run a straight battery cable from the battery to his trailer hitch underneath the frame rail. So I proceeded, I was lifting the car up, and I noticed this orangish green glow coming from the engine bay.
Jeff, what are you welding?
I was like, what is that beautiful light? And by the time we got it back down, the car was pretty much toast.
Yeah. There you go.
But I wasn't responsible for it, because you shouldn't have an unfused battery cable running on the frame.
That's I mean, in the pantheon of bad ideas, that's up there. That's I mean, it's something that, like I said, I learned how to troubleshoot by working on cars, because
I learned how to troubleshoot by breaking my own stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, but it's taught me a lot. And, you know, honestly, like, what professions are always going to be there? Like, people want to say, oh, fine, you need a college degree. I feel almost duped, because I got a college degree, and then I learned so much more in the actual trade that I work in, that I was like, well, I should have just started at 18.
So
just,
much like, debt.
Coffee.
So much debt.
I didn't have a lot of debt. Like, I'm clear on that, but that's just, again, because of the choices I made, and I didn't want to have a lot of debt. There's no sort of shame in not going to college when you understand, like, listen, over the last 12 years since I got my degree, I would have loved to live like I was in construction, or maybe a plumber. If I had started my own shop, it would be probably doing much better now than I am currently.
If you survive the recession.
Well, I mean, but people always need their cars fixed, and they're not going to fix them themselves, especially, you know, if you specialize. And, you know, I'm not afraid of high-end European cars with finicky electronics and electrical systems like that. I own Volvos, so I'm pretty used to it.
If I could do anything, you know, salary aside, I would be a tow truck driver.
Tow truck driver, really?
I mean, you're never not going to need a tow truck.
Well, that's true. You'd people also always work tow trucks all the time.
Yeah, but
like middle of the night snowstorm, that's the worst, man.
That's what I don't
know. Talking about? He lives in Florida. You live in Tennessee. I would tell you.
Oh yeah, that's true. The only time I think about tow truck drivers is the run-ins I've had with tow truck drivers, which has typically been in the middle of the night in a rainstorm or in a snowstorm. So, you know.
The only tow truck experiences I've had are getting towed from, like, an illegal parking job.
Mine were my first Volvo. I had AAA Plus, and boy, did that pay for itself. I actually got their letter like, you have used up all but one of your free tows this year, so don't do it.
Don't do it, man. Don't do it.
Make it count.
The last one was when the Laycock overdrive on my 240. The solenoid would like partially pressurize every now and then, and it did this once on the highway, and just like I was shifting and had my foot to the floor, and it just wouldn't go anywhere. So I was like, all right, I think it's done. So the car went back, and it was like after Thanksgiving break. The car went back and sat until Christmas break, and I put a new transmission in it. And that's my story. So,
but going back to this really quick, I didn't have a high school where they had an auto mechanic class.
Yeah, I did not either.
To have done that, but I think our society has just come to a point where, you know, we get the standardized testing. Everyone goes to school. If you can't get into a college, you go to University of Phoenix. I mean, not saying anything bad about University of Phoenix.
I will say bad things about University of Phoenix because why? Because they want to enroll you. And here's the farce, okay? If you're going to go to college, go to a real college. Don't go to a for-profit college, because all they want to do is enroll you, get your federal loan money, and they don't care what you do. They don't care if you go to class, because they've got their money and you have the debt, and they are fine with that.
And then you get so many more people with college diplomas now who say, I can't get a job. And now a bachelor's degree means nothing. Now you have to get a master's.
Yeah. Which I find ludicrous, because really all of the people with MBAs that I've met, and like I've worked for people who went to Harvard Business School. And the joke there is like, you take away the H, it's all BS. I have seen people who've come up and bootstrapped themselves with more actual real world business experience be way sharper than people who went to school and got an MBA. And then they get out in the real world and they don't get it. It's like, well, the textbook said to do it. And so it's that kind of thing. You know, nothing really accounts for experience, and that's something you can only get by doing it. And it doesn't, with sort of standardized tests and all of the way our education system is gone, something like working on a car teaches you analytical thinking. And you can apply that to like every facet of your life. I mean, I do it even while we're writing. You know, it's like, okay, so they're claiming this. Well, what's the benefit of that? And you sort of think about how all the systems work together. It's just like I said tonight, you know, you take the weight out of the car, but you also reduce the horsepower. So, you know, it's understanding how two things work together. And I don't think that would come without sort of some of the experience of how things are, you know, all interoperable, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I killed that. Awesome.
That's slow clap, buddy.
Yeah. Woo! Yeah.
I'm out.
I want Mike Holmes on the podcast. I'll have to work on that. He's a car guy, and he's really big on the trades, and I love his show because it's awesome, and it makes me really angry when I look around my house. And he's Canadian, so.
If he ever came to my house, I think he would hunt down our inspector.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because yeah, I'm not going to get into that.
I would be right there with him because my inspector missed a bunch of stuff, and I'm just like, yeah.
Q&A.
Yeah, Q&A. Let's see. I miss Chris Shunk. Will he be coming back as a guest anytime soon, says Lamar J. from Arkansas.
Give it time,
Alaska,
Lamar.
Alaska, AK. I'm an idiot.
Arkansas.
sense.
I went to college.
I went to film school. I can tell you reciprocity and chromatic aberration. I don't know the states.
All right. Yeah, no, Shunk will be back soon. Sooner than you know. Sooner than you know.
Episode 300.
Oh, wait.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Blow the mystery. Way to blow the mystery. Thanks.
I want people to listen.
All that mystery I set up there, blown. That's all right. Thanks. No, it's good. No.
Our four listeners already knew anyway. So, all right, fine. We'll pick another one. Trucks are near and dear to your heart. Why can't Ford bring the next generation Ranger to the U.S. if they already spent the time and money developing the new one for other markets? It won the Australian truck shootout. It looks awesome. Tony.
Well, Tony, I'll tell you. It's it's because it's expensive, and it's 3/4 of the size of the F-150, and Ford doesn't want to wee on the golden goose that is the F-150, so they're not going to do it. That simple.
Chicken tax.
That too.
Chicken tax. Although, there's something about that sort of like there's a treaty where you can import from Australia, and I don't know. I heard something about that somewhere from about the Holden Ute. How that would have been clear of the chicken tax for some reason. So I'll have to use my analytical thinking and look into that.
Right.
Here's another one. Speaking of cost, why can't all the power windows in cars be auto down? I have this same question.
Yeah, I hate auto down, actually.
Can't really? Stand
it. Yeah, because if I just want to crack the window, I end up in like a 3-minute battle with the window to like just get it to crack. It's like all the way down. I'm like, no, just crack. It's like all the way up. I'm like, no, God, damn it. Why all the way down? No, window.
I would pay money. I would pay $950 and a Previa to see that.
Okay, we'll make it happen because it makes me so irate. Like, I'm at the point where I'm just like, I'm just going to put my fist through the window and you'll be down all the time. How do you like that window?
when you come up with the pizza.
God. We're not going to have that problem because the Scout has manual windows. I can position the window any place I want.
Does it have those vents?
It's infinite.
Does it have those little vents? Yeah.
And two vents. It's got the vent windows and it's got vents in the floorboard.
Oh, I love the vents in the floorboard.
I don't like cars with auto down but not auto up.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's
yeah. If it's gonna be auto, make it. It is a cost thing because they have to put the sensor in there to sense when it's being a guillotine on something, so it'll like it'll automatically reverse, and that costs a little bit extra. And when you're building,
which is like a double switch.
Yeah, when you're building that many cars, it does add up. Although now I bet they could just sense the amount of current that the motor's pulling off the electrical system, and they can just implement it all in software instead of having some fancy analog system. So I don't know. That's yay, auto downs. And we covered the Sentra. I saw the Sentra question there, so we'll move on to RMT1's question because he always gives us one that we can answer. Do you think the FRS BRZ platform will be used to create other variants like a four-door coupe for enthusiasts with kids?
Seems unlikely.
I hope not.
I hope not. I'm down with that. I'm okay with that. It seems unlikely.
No, I hope they don't. Because who's going to buy it? Like the FRS and the BRZ are a thing, and they're great because they are what they are. If you start adding more doors and stuff, it's going to get into this territory of what? It's going to be like a $30,000 Panamera.
That sounds like a good idea
to me. Actually, I'm perfectly all right with that.
Me and Zach today were talking about a BRZ Brat.
Yeah, I have a welder and the reciprocating saw.
What's up, Mitsosima?
You don't need a welder. Do you have a pop rivet gun?
I just learned to weld sheet metal. God, I've opened up a whole new horrible world. Because now I'm like, I can fix that. I can put floorboards in that. No big deal. Can spot weld. Let's do this.
Oh, okay.
I just use that spray on rubber stuff.
The stuff that the guy on TV sells?
Yeah.
Fiberglass.
I hate that. I hate that with a passion. I don't want fiberglass floors. If you're going to fix it, put metal in. Metal was there. Metal is there for a reason. I don't want plastic. And no. It's brittle. It's just, it's not right. So do we know any, we've talked about the trucks a little bit. Have we heard anything, speaking of trucks, I know you guys keep up with them, or at least Zach does, have we heard anything more about the next-gen GM trucks, or just what we've seen in spy pictures and stuff?
Not other than they're coming. I mean, they're going to have to really step up their game. You know, I think Ford was surprised by what Ram pulled off in terms of fuel economy.
But Ram had the engine and the transmission already from the Charger and 300. GM doesn't have anything.
GM has a 3.6. They also have...
Oh, sorry.
They have a 4.3.
Both of those engines are freaking ancient, man. They're not going to get anywhere.
It's 4.3 is from the 60s.
The 4.3 is no, from 1955, actually, because it is 3/4 of a small block.
Yeah, but neither of those engines are going to return 25 mile per gallon highway, no matter what transmission you bolt it to. That's just not going to happen.
They take out of the truck, wouldn't you say?
What if they made a Volt pickup truck?
Yeah, I think they tried that.
It also run on fairy dust. You should give that a shot.
But I really don't see GM getting anywhere close to Ford or Ram.
Well, they may have something special up their sleeve. I just haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah. I would not count them out, for sure. And speaking of GM, we'll stay on the GM tip. They've taken a beating over the Malibu Eco.
So
including the Ford Forbes guy who says they're going to be bankrupt again, and I don't completely agree that they're going to be bankrupt again, but I think they're somewhat off the rails in terms of management. They didn't clean house like they should have.
They can have a Silverado with e-assist.
Yeah, because that's working out so well. Hey, now the base power plant in a Regal is with e-assist. It costs you $3,000 more and it sucks infinitely more.
Shaq likes it.
Yeah, great. He can have them. You can wear them as a pair of shoes. So, what are your thoughts on the overall Malibu's competitive position now that we've driven the 2.5? I will say, I haven't driven the 2.5. I think Sabatini drove it. Did you, either of you guys, drive the 2.5 liter?
I have not. I've just driven the Eco.
Yeah. I don't think it's a train wreck. Andy J from South Carolina is asking if it's the train wreck that will destroy GM. I don't think it is, but I don't think that they're ever going to be as competitive as something like the Fusion is. I think you're going to see like Altima, Fusion, Accord up at the top, sort of, and of course Camry.
Camry doesn't have to do anything to be the top car. It's just like, yeah, whatever, I'm Camry.
Yeah, so they'll
do what I want.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of competition for that Camry now, and I think even the sort of diehard Camry buyers are realizing that there's other stuff out there that is comparable. So it may be unseated. I don't know whether the Altima has the sort of wherewithal to do it. I would guess that it might. But we'll see. I'd love to see the Fusion do it. I'd love to see the Fusion be on top because I just think it's pretty. Yeah, I see.
Has huge, chunky freaking pillars, which makes driving cumbersome.
Yeah, but, I mean, people find driving cumbersome anyway because it interrupts other activities. So I'll pick up with an email question since we are sponsored by Tire Rack. It's a tire question. And Shane from Chicago says he's going to need some winter tires soon, and he wants to ask what my preferred brand is, but I'll put it out to everyone because, I mean, you know, living in Florida and Tennessee, you guys obviously buy winter tires. Ideally, I'd like a cheaper set because I'll be getting good summer tires once the weather gets nice again. What do you recommend? The last winter tires I bought were Continentals. I think they were Extreme Winter Contacts. They're kind of like Blizzaks. They're studless snows. And I've had Blizzaks before that. So that's my recommendation. And I just thought it dovetailed really nicely with the sponsorship message. Where I can say that we are sponsored by Tire Rack, your online stop for tires, wheels, brakes, accessories, and know-how. Check them out at TireRack.com for expert tire tests, excellent user reviews, lots of products. And, I mean, either you guys actually try winter tires, or do you just shrivel up at the sight of snow?
I grew up in Michigan, and I missed the day where I had a little rear-wheel drive Comanche. And in the wintertime, I threw in these big, meaty off-road snow tires and about 65 bags of sand. and that was all I needed for winter driving. But I've never had to really buy serious winter tires.
I'm thinking that may happen with the Miata. It all depends on how much my wife wants to go to work when it snows. Because when it does snow down here, everybody just shuts down.
You're probably nice. Better off like being off the road, not because like you can't drive in it. It's because everybody else can't.
Yeah, that's absolutely accurate.
And the thing with like, I never really had much of an issue with going with a pair of snows. My Fox wagon had a pair of snows on the back. Going wasn't really the issue. It's turning and stopping that makes me get a full set. And so that's, I like the studless snows. If you have a truck or, you know, something, or you live where it's really icy, there are, you know, studded snows if you want to chew up the roads.
Yeah.
Those are freaking terrifying when it's dry.
Like a man.
Studded snows are just your life will flash before your eyes at times. Well,
because your traction is greatly reduced when you're not on snow and ice.
Yeah, and the tungsten studs wear down pretty quick, too.
Got all these little pieces of metal sticking out of the terrain tire.
Yeah. So, there we go. I think we have done an appreciably good job on the podcast this week. So, I would like to thank Jeff and Zach for coming on. I'd like to thank the Tire Rack for sponsoring us. And you know where to find us at iTunes or podcast@autoblog.com. You can leave us comments on the post. You can send us emails. You can certainly go and give us some reviews on iTunes and tell me how much you miss Shunk, because that's all I've heard.
Aww.
I'm trying. I really am trying.
You're doing a great job, man. You really are.
I'm not. But we will catch you guys next week.
All right, guys. We'll see you later.
Adios.